Hebrews chapter 11. Grab your Bibles and go with me to Hebrews chapter 11. And I want to read a good chunk of Hebrews chapter 11, more the last part than the first part. Hebrews 11 is, for a lot of people, it's their most beloved chapter of the Bible, especially for those that maybe are going through hard times or have gone through hard times. It kind of makes sense of some of the trials that we go through. So Hebrews chapter 11, and just follow along. I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit. I'll begin reading in verse 13. Hebrews 11, verse 13. It says, "These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had an opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city." Look at verse 32. "And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release, so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging and chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawed in two, they were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats and destitute, afflicted and mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And all these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better for us, that apart from us, they should not be made perfect." Well, Hebrews 11, especially the second part of Hebrews 11, it's been filled with meaning, and people like to read it and study it and think about it. But what it does for me personally is it makes me ask the question, if I were one of these guys, one of these men, one of these women, that were mistreated, that were living in caves, that were looking down the scope and of fire in my future, would I have been able to stand up under that trial? Like, if you guys ever read these and like put yourself in the story and asked, you know, if it came time for me to either deny the Lord or be tortured or imprisoned or lose my family or any of those things, what would I do? And there's been times in my life that I've sat there and I've thought and I've wondered and kind of struggled with, what would I do? Could I, in that moment, stand up under the pain? Or would I collapse? Would I deny? What would I do? Now, that moment may be in the future for all of us, depending on how things go. But how would I do? And what becomes even more bothersome, at least for me, is when I think about these guys and all that they went through for their faith. And then I wonder if I could do it. But then I put that side by side with the realities of some of my own failings day to day, week to week. Then I really start getting uncomfortable. Because I think there's some of us that look at this, we go, yeah, we could stand up under the torture. Yeah, we could really do it for Christ. Yeah, we'd be able to make it. We'd stand firm. But some of us are the same ones that have a hard time controlling our tongue. Struggle at work. Struggle in our marriage, loving our wives the way that we're supposed to. So then we think, well, if I struggle with such small things over here, why would I think that I could stand up under the big thing over here? And maybe that I'm the only one that reads myself into this story, but I bet you've had some of those same struggles. There's a phrase in verse 38 that probably in all of Hebrews chapter 11, the phrase in verse 38 sticks out the most. Let me read that again. It's the first phrase of verse 38. It says, "Of whom the world was not worthy." So after all the trials and persecutions, the faith and all the things that the author is talking about, he simply says the world was not worthy of them. Then if you look at the next phrase, he goes back to talking about deserts and mountains and caves and all the other things. The world was not worthy of them. What do you think that means? What does it mean that from God's point of view, that people who stand up under the trials, Christians who are persecuted, who suffer, the world, not meaning the planet, meaning the people of the world, they're not worthy to have such excellent people like this walking among them. What does that mean? I would really like to know, from God's point of view, what that means. And how I could be one of these people that from God's point of view, he looks at and says, this is one of the ones that I number among those that the world is not worthy of. I mean, wouldn't you really like to know how to be one of those kind of guys, one of those kinds of women? Like if God really said, okay, all you got to do to be one of these people, to really please me, is to do X. Would you really want to know what it is? Now, it's a fair question, because if you know what it is, then you have a dilemma, right? Am I going to do it, or am I not going to do it? Do I care? Do I not care? Am I going to do it with passion, or am I just going to kind of squeeze my way through? What am I going to do? And that's a good question, especially when you realize that if there's a life that God considers unworthy of the rest of the world, in other words, there's a life that is worthy from God's point of view, then it also means that there is a life that he does not consider worthy of him. And so then you're forced to ask the question, well, if there's a life that he considers worthy and a life that he considers unworthy, where am I? Where am I landing? From God's point of view, not from my point of view, the church point of view, everybody else's point of view, but from God's point of view, am I living this worthy life or am I not living this worthy life? And it becomes especially important, I think, when you get to the end of the year, and it's a time to reflect back on the year, it's a time to dream forward into 2019. Was this a year for you that God would say, that was a worthy year? And it's haunting to think those questions, I think. Because it's way easier just to skate on by. It's way easier, if we're honest, just to be religious. What's hard is to be introspective, to think and to resolve and to look in the mirror and wonder about these things. Because I guarantee we're all going to get to heaven someday, and none of us are going to say, boy, I wish I lived a more unworthy life. I think we're going to be really haunted by how much we could have done and been and weren't. So let's answer that question a little bit. What is it that, at the end of this year and the beginning of the next year, what is a life that is pleasing to God really look like? And part of the idea today is that you only have 367 more days, which is how many days until the end of next year. You have 367 more days to work at being the kind of person that God wants you to be. So at the end of next year, when you look back at 2019, what are you going to be glad that you did? What kind of character are you going to be glad that you had? What kind of work are you going to be glad that you did? What are you going to be proud of in 367 days? That's where we're going. And we're going to be studying a passage in Colossians chapter 1. So if you flip over to Colossians chapter 1, we have a passage here that very clearly says this is what a life that is pleasing to God really looks like. Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1. I'd love to spend a whole lot of time in chapter 1, especially beginning in verse 15 and following. There are two passages that are the clearest about who Christ is. In Colossians 1:15, he's the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, is part of one of the key passages about Christ. But before that passage, beginning in verse 10, Paul is very clear, I think, here about the life that is pleasing to the Lord, or a life that is worthy of the Lord, to use the Hebrews 11 word. So I'm going to begin reading in verse 9. Paul says, "And so from the day we heard, we have not ceased to pray for you, asking that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding." Now here's the phrase. "And so to walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him." And that's really what we're going to be asking today. What does a life that is pleasing to the Lord look like? What does a life that is worthy of the Lord look like? What does a 2019 year that is pleasing to the Lord for you going to be? And at the end, we're going to give you some time to work on that a little bit. So that's verse 10. A life that is worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him. Now it goes on, and there are four ing words here, four action words. The ESV changes one of them. If you have an NIV, I think it does a little bit better. But let's pull out these four words that Paul uses to describe a life that is pleasing to the Lord. All right, so verse 10, so that you have a walk man in a manner worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him. Now, there's four ing words. Bearing fruit in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God. Verse 11, may you be strengthened, or being strengthened with all power, according to his glorious might, for all endurance and patience with joy, giving, next ing word, thanks to the Lord, who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. So we have these four ing words, and really, the first part of Colossians is a long extended prayer. And if you look back, verse 3 is about prayer, verse 9 is about prayer, verse 10 is about prayer. It's a chapter where Paul is saying to the church in Colossae, I am praying for you guys. I'm specifically praying for four actions in your life, but I'm praying for you guys. So before we get to the four actions, let's talk about prayer just a little bit. Let me ask you, what do you hear when somebody says to you, I'm praying for you? How do you receive that? So let's say Ron says to me, you know what, I got the struggle going on in my life. And I say to Ron, I'm going to pray for you. How does Ron hear that? Ron, how would you hear that if I said that to you? I'm going to get to that in just a second. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But more specifically, how would you hear, if you knew I did, you'd be grateful, right? You'd feel encouraged. You'd feel like he cares about me enough to do this. He's gonna chunk off some of his time to pray for me. I think that's how most of us hear it when somebody says, I'm going to pray for you, or how can I pray for you? It feels like they care. But have you ever said to somebody, like Ron just said here, have you ever said to somebody, I'm going to pray for you, but then you never actually pray for them? Now, I'm sure that I'm the only one that's ever done that. I'm sure you guys have never done that. But there's a good and a bad to that, I would say. First of all, let's just be honest. If you say you're going to do it and you don't, there's a word for that. But I think when we say that to each other, what we're trying to do is say, I love you. I care about you. I'm interested in what's going on in your life. I want this to be better for you. I want this hurdle for you to overcome, this hurdle, this obstacle. That's what we're saying when we say to each other, I'm going to pray for you. I am praying for you. Like, have you ever had somebody, let's say you have this thing going on in your life. Now, 3 or 4 weeks pass, and then somebody comes up to you and says, hey, how's it been going? I've been praying for you. Isn't there a little part of your heart that just feels like, wow, Man, really? You really did? There's just a part of us in the community of faith, in the church, that we respond and we react to the idea that we're praying for each other. We hear it as encouragement. Now, just as a side note, if you say to somebody, I'm going to pray for you, make sure you pray for them. That's just a side note. Maybe it goes without saying, but I think sometimes we get into this, hey, I'm going to pray for you, and we have no intention in our heart of ever doing it. Let's be praying people. We're going to work on that a little bit this year. My point is that there is a cue that we could take from Paul here when he says to the Colossae church, which was going through terrible trials, many of them had already died for their faith. Their families had died for their faith. Many of them were being tortured. They were thrown in prison. And he says to them, I'm praying for you. And I think there's a little bit of a cue that we could take from Paul here in saying this to each other and talking about this a little bit more often and making this a normal part of our conversation. I'm praying for you. I love you. How can I pray for you? What's going on in your life? Please let me know. Ironically, if we can press down on that idea just a little bit, there are far more people who say, I will pray for you, than there are people who actually pray. We want to work on that a little bit. And this year as a congregation, we're going to devote several nights of the year to congregational prayer so we can work on this a little bit better. But there's far more that ask for prayer and say they're praying than actually prayer. So let me press on this just a little bit. We have a church prayer letter, prayer chain that goes out. There's an email that goes out with these prayer requests. Many of you, maybe not all of you, but many of you receive that. When you receive those emails, what do you do with them? Just think about that for a minute. Do you read them and go, oh, that's interesting? Do you read them and go, I should pray for that person or send them a note? Or do you read it and go, I'm going to stop right now and pray for this item? What do you do with those? Sometimes I wonder if we don't use the prayer chain as like a glorified gossip chain for us to let each other know what's going on. If we're going to call it a prayer chain, let's pray for each other. And sometimes the requests are from people we don't know, and it's their Aunt Bertha's doing whatever. I understand that. But if we're going to be a church that prays for each other and really loves each other, not just on the surface level, not just at the word level, not just saying we do, but to really pray for each other and love each other, then let's get on our knees and pray for each other when there are genuine needs going on. And again, in 2019, we're going to have several evenings that we're going to give to church-wide congregational prayer. But even more than this encouragement here, what Paul is doing is he says that he's specifically praying for two things. I want to show you those again. So in verse 9, he says that he's not ceased praying for them, but he specifically, in verse 10, says he's praying that they have a life that is worthy of the Lord and a life that they live that is fully pleasing to him. So he's praying for these things. Now, maybe they're the same thing. I'm not sure if you can live a life worthy of the Lord and not please him, or please him and not live a life worthy of the Lord. But he's specifically saying that the direction of their life would be pleasing to God. Now, here's why this is important. We could talk around and around and around about prayer. And, you know, I think most messages you hear on prayer are kind of like guilt-oriented. And I don't like that. So let me just say that from the Bible's point of view, the most important thing in your life is to live a life that is pleasing to the Lord. That is your ultimate goal. That is our goal as Christians, to live a life that is pleasing to the Lord. That's the goal. So above everything else and all the do's and the don'ts and the actions and all the shoulda, woulda, couldas and all those things, the basic question of living a life that is pleasing to God, am I doing it, am I not doing it, is basic and fundamental to being a Christian. And there are far too many, I think, that just kind of go along with the wave and the motion and this idea of grasping life and living it in a way that ultimately is pleasing to the Lord. And in a sense, it doesn't matter if it's not pleasing to anybody else. It's a little bit outside of where some of us are. And I'd just like to say that if you feel like at times that you're living in the doldrums spiritually, could it be that you're not pursuing this idea of seeking to please the Lord in every single part of your life? Not in the guilt of, oh, woe is me, I got to live under the heavy hand of the Lord. No, this idea that it is my great joy to seek to please the Lord in all that I do. I think there's a lot of people that are content to fill the pew, but in reality, they have very empty souls. The big pursuit in life for us as Christians, the big question for us is, are we living a life pleasing to the Lord in every single area, or are we not? That's the big goal. And that's where Paul begins this prayer. This manner, this life that is worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to Him. So then I think what he does in these next verses, he goes on to describe then, what does a life that is pleasing to the Lord look like? What is a life that is worthy of the Lord look like? And that's these four ing participle words that he uses to describe them. Let's walk through them. And again, this is not a like guilt kind of sermon. This is a question at the end of the year for you to look in the mirror and say, is it true of me? How can I do this better next year? And not for my sake. I mean, I love you guys, but in a sense, this is for the Lord's sake. So it's a good question for us to come to at the end of the year. So the first ing word there comes in verse 10:11 in the middle of verse 10. It says, bearing fruit in every good work. So the first way, from Paul's point of view, the first way that you live a life that is pleasing to the Lord is by serving the Lord somewhere in ministry. Now, let's make sure we understand two parts of this. When the Bible talks about fruit, it talks about fruit in two different ways. One is Galatians 5, the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness. That list, those are the fruit of the Spirit. That's character. Those are byproducts of living a life and pursuing the Lord. You work and you develop those over the course of a life. By the way, it is one fruit. It is not lots of fruits. And that's a whole separate sermon. But it's one fruit with all of those together. Okay? But the Bible also talks about a second kind of fruit that is not a character fruit, but it is a what you do with your time and your abilities and your talents and your experiences and your interests. What you do, that's called fruit as well. So there's two different ways. Fruit as character, fruit as what you do. Now in this case, in verse 10, because it says bearing fruit in every good work, we know he's talking about the kind of fruit that comes by what you do serving the Lord. Now the term that we use for kingdom work is ministry. And ministry can take on lots of different forms. It can take on forms outside the church. It can take on forms inside the church. But I want you to very clearly see that in Paul's mind, he ties together a life that is pleasing to the Lord with a life that is serving the Lord in some capacity. That's very important. In other words, you cannot please the Lord if you're not serving Him in some capacity. These aren't my words. These aren't my opinions. This is what Paul is saying. A life that is pleasing to the Lord will serve Him in some way. So let me ask you, are you serving the Lord? And there are so, so many possibilities. And I'm not one that necessarily believes that only serving the Lord inside the church like counts. In some ways, I don't care where you serve. I just want you serving the Lord somewhere. But in the church, if you're like I've had people say to me, listen, Scott, if I can't sing and I can't teach, there's no place for me to serve in the church. Well, I want you to know, number one, I can't sing either. So we can have like our own like pity party around that. I wish I could sing. But there are so many ways to serve the Lord right here in our own church. You could listen to a verse, to kids say verses in Awana. You could lead an ABF. You could make coffee Sunday morning. And you say, well, is that a ministry? Try not having coffee on a Sunday morning and see if it's a ministry, all right? You could volunteer in the church office. There's always work to do there. You can make brownies for the staff. Just thought I'd sneak that one in there a little bit. You know, we have work days, we have committees. You can work with the youth group. You could teach little kids classes. We always have people that need to be visited in the hospital. Maybe you're really, if you're like an extrovert, visiting people in the hospital is like one of the most fun things to do. I love visiting shut-ins and people in the hospital and just sitting around yakking with them. I think it's such a fun way to encourage people. You could volunteer in the nursery. You could sing in the praise band. You could work in the sound booth. Right there, that's Jake. Everybody turn around and look at Jake. Jake, you got a great beard going. All right? It's a great... But every Sunday, we have people back there. Danny's back there running computer. Jake's back there running sound. And we have people every Sunday that are volunteering. They're greeting at the doors. They're ushering people. Tons of ways that you can serve. And outside of the church, there's obviously lots of ways. I was just thinking of Jeff over there. Jeff, I know they have lots of different ministries going on. They have the regional center looking for ways to mentor the boys there at the regional center. You know, they're building all of those. They're going to be expanding out there. Lots of great ways to serve around. The question isn't, can we come up with a list? The question is, where are you serving? And I don't just shrug this off. So here's what happens with a lot of people that have been in the church for a long time. They say things like, well, my family is my ministry. Or my husband is my ministry. No, your husband is your cross to bear. Just thought I'd throw that one out. My husband's my ministry. Or my job is my ministry. Yeah, I understand all of those things. But what you find in Scripture is that things like family and job are basic expectations on top of the expectation of serving the Lord somewhere in His kingdom. Are you serving? And remember the point. Paul says that a life that is pleasing to the Lord will have serving the Lord somewhere. But if you're not serving the Lord somewhere, it's really hard to live a life pleasing to the Lord. Now, I totally get that there are seasons of life. There are times that it's tough. You know, there's lots of things that can happen. But from a general, overall kind of trajectory of life, those who live a life pleasing to the Lord are those that are serving Him somewhere. That's number one. The second ing word there, it says bearing fruit, verse 10, bearing fruit in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God. Increasing in the knowledge of God. It's a phrase, it's kind of a funny phrase, but if we say it a little bit different way, it makes more sense. If we're growing in our relationship with the Lord. If we're growing in our relationship with the Lord. So if being a Christian or attending church in order to like placate God or to win His favor is not the idea here. It's not the idea, you know, back in the 90s when I was a youth pastor, all these youth pastors were walking around, they were saying things like, man, we want the kids in our youth group to be able to pass a theology test. Well, you know what? Passing a theology test is not what Paul means here. In fact, did you know that some of the people in the world that know the most about the Bible aren't even Christians? They teach in universities. They teach the morality of the Bible. But they're not Christians. So basic knowledge is not the idea here. So just, you know, filling information in the mind is not what he is getting at. What he's getting at is, are you growing in your relationship with an infinite God? And so the question is, well, how do you grow in this relationship? How do you grow in knowing God? And the basic idea, I think, is you spend time with Him. It's the same way that I get to know my wife better. I have to spend time, have to, I shouldn't have said that way. I get to spend time with her. Don't tell her I said that. I get to spend time, but spending time together is how you get to know people. So spending time with the Lord is how you get to know the Lord. And so it's not in the increasing in the knowledge sense of like, you know, I can parse these verbs in Greek, but it's a growing relationship with the Lord. And the way you spend time with the Lord is primarily by spending time in His Word. And I want to push again for you to consider, in 2018, how did you do at your Bible reading? Were you consistent? Were you regular? Was it one day a week? Was it five? Was it seven? How did you do? There are so many great resources out there. There are apps on your phone that you can get that'll come up with verse of the day, chapter of the day. You can get the 365-day Bible. You can get the one-year Bible. You can get the Memorize the Bible. There are so many things that you can get out there to help you get in the Word. But I want you to just, I'm going to give you about 10 seconds to think back at 2018. How did you do in your time in the Word? You will not grow in your relationship with the Lord if you don't spend time in the Word. Period. And I wish I could give you like growing in the Lord for dummies or like, you know, shortcuts to, but there's no such thing. You got to spend time in the Word. So have you this last year? And again, there's lots of different resources you can get out there, and you can, you know, there's a great app that I was playing around with for a while that helps you memorize parts of Scripture. So it comes up several times throughout the day, the same verse, and so you see it and you read it, and then like a couple hours later, it comes back up again, and you read it again. It just helps you memorize some of those key verses. But on top of just spending time in the Word, there's the second part of studying. And that's different than reading. Reading and studying are two different things. But sometimes people go, well, you know, studying is hard. What do I read? What are the books? How do I pick a topic? Literally, you can choose any part of the Bible, and you could decide to become an expert in that subject. Like we have some people, they might be sitting over here, that love prophecy and end times. So they love to read stuff about prophecy and end times and maybe even go on a cruise, right? So why not become experts? Why not read about Romans 8, or why not become an expert in Nahum, or, you know, what? Choose whatever subject you want, and maybe this year, 2019, you say, okay, I'm going to study this, and I'm going to become an expert in this, and work hard. So if studying the Word is kind of listening to what He says, then praying is talking to Him. And instead of talking a whole bunch about that, I just... There's an irony I find in prayer. Here's the irony. The irony is that we admire people that have great prayer lives. But rarely do we ask, why can't I be one of those people? Why couldn't you be one of those people that people look at and go, man, that's the kind of prayer life I want to have. There is literally nothing stopping you from being that kind of man, that kind of woman. You could do it. Again, back to the point. A life that is pleasing to the Lord is one that has an incremental increase in the knowledge and the relationship with the Lord. If you're not growing in your relationship with the Lord, you cannot live a life that is pleasing to the Lord. Number three, third N-I-G word, which is the most interesting of all, in my own opinion. The ESV that I have changes it a little bit. May you be strengthened with all power, or being strengthened with all power. The reason this one is important is because of the four verbs, this is the only one that is passive, which means that this is something that is done to you, or you receive the action. This isn't something you are doing. Now, what I mean by that is that what Paul is saying here is that part of a life that is pleasing to the Lord is a life that allows God to have His way with them. God is doing this to you. So part of this is that there's a humility in recognizing that it is God who works in us. In a sense, it's realizing that we are not God. And you're like, oh, I know I'm not God. Don't we all act like it sometimes? I think we do. So it's recognizing that He is God, and no amount of our brilliance, no amount of our pride, no amount of our knowledge, no amount of our talents, no amount of our abilities, none of us is going to make us more worthy in that sense, because God is God and we are not. And it really manifests itself in a lot of ways. And let me just press here a little bit. Part of allowing God to be God and part of recognizing that we are not God is not being a know-it-all. Is being somebody who listens more than speaks. It's somebody who treats others with love and respect, even if they're different, even if they smell funny, even if they, and just make the list all along. It's being a peacemaker. And for many of us, and I'm the first one there, that does not come naturally. It's being the first to say, I'm sorry, instead of presuming that it's the other person that was wrong. It's not comparing yourself to others, spiritually or otherwise. It's being open and transparent, even with your own failings. You know, the reason that we don't share our failings with other people is because of our own pride. But if at the end of the day, it's all about the Lord doing His work in us, and expunging that pride from us, why would we be so reticent to share our own struggles? It's embracing the ones that fall away and maybe even hugging and smiling them back to the Lord. It's volunteering to doing what nobody else wants to do. It's being okay with being behind the scenes. We can make a very long list. The point is, that a life that is pleasing to the Lord makes their life about Him and not just about their own needs and wants. And if you're doing this and you're working at this and humbling yourself, this is part of what Paul says. This is a life that is pleasing to the Lord. Last one. Last one is all the way down to verse 12. The last ing word is giving thanks to the Lord. Giving thanks. So the Lord is pleased when we are grateful or are filled with gratitude. Now, verse 12 says giving thanks, but the real idea behind this is having a humble heart, a joyful heart, that the Lord hates a proud heart. And if I could say it this way, the Lord doesn't like grumpy people. So let me ask, do you know some grumpy Christians that are always grumpy? Don't throw out names out loud. Why is it that some of the happiest people I know are Christians and some of the grumpiest people I know are also Christians? Why is it that people sometimes say things like, I would rather work with an unsaved guy than a saved guy? You see, gratitude is just recognizing that all blessings come from God. And so a grateful person is quick to say things like thank you and excuse me and how can I help? A grateful person is not a complainer. Like, do you know that person who is a Johnny Raincloud, no matter what the idea, no matter what the program, no matter what anything, it's always negative, it's always bad. You know, hey, this person came to Christ, are you sure? You know, no matter what happens, it's always bad. Like, have you known those people? And every church has them. No matter what happens in the church, they're against it. You know, they're against the programs. They're against everything. Part of being a grateful person, being filled with gratitude, is not being that kind of a person. So this guy, he enjoys being together with God's people. There's a cheerful and a helpful smile. There's a check in his spirit with critical words. This person might take up a ministry of writing encouragement notes to people or visiting those that are going through hard times. But listen, in every church, there are people that everyone sees them as nothing more than critical, grumpy people. And if you're one of those kinds of people, you're not helping the church. You're not helping the cause of Christ. Now, I love free thinkers. I love challengers. But being a challenger and a free thinker is not the same as being the person that is always like my nose was this week. I had a cold all week. And you know how it is after you blow your nose like the 250th time and you start getting the Rudolph nose, you know? Well, there are people in the church that are kind of that way. You know, nobody wants to touch them. Because they're toxic. Well, you can't be a toxic person and a grateful person at the same time. So back to the point, there's a life that is pleasing to the Lord, and part of a life that is pleasing to the Lord is a life that demonstrates gratitude. So we have these four ing words. Let's come back to these four. God is pleased when we're serving Him. God is pleased when we're growing, we're increasing. God is pleased when we recognize our dependence on Him. And God is pleased when we demonstrate gratitude towards Him. So let's go back to where we started. Hebrews 11 says that the world was not worthy of some kind of people. Colossians 1, Paul says that he's praying that the people in Colossae would live a life that is worthy of the Lord and pleasing to Him in every way. So my question, with 367 days left until the end of 2019, will you this next year live a life that is worthy of the Lord? Will you this next year live a life that is pleasing to the Lord? And if you will, and if you are going to do that, what needs to change? What do you need to work on? What do you need to throw out? What do you need to add to make this next year pleasing to the Lord in every way? So what we're going to do is, if you grab your bulletins, the back of the bulletin is blank. What I'd like you to do is we're going to turn on some music here just a little while, just for a couple minutes. And I want you to, as we leave these four points up here, I want you to think about 2019 and think about this next year and this pleasing the Lord. And in all four of these categories, I tried to give very concrete examples of ways to do them. And I want you to consider, what in 2019 will I commit to working on, to changing, to adding, to getting rid of, in order to live a life that is pleasing to the Lord? Understand the instructions? All right, so we're going to leave these four up there. And this is just between you and God. You're not going to turn it in. It's not for a grade or anything. But just in the next few minutes, we only have like 2 or 3 minutes, we'll be done. What in 2019 will you commit to working on in order that your 2019 year will be more pleasing to Him than your 2018 year was? All right, hopefully you're able to think of one or two items, ways to work at this. Again, if we come back to the idea that from God's point of view, there is a life that is pleasing to Him and a life that is not pleasing to Him. And the great goal for all of us as believers is to live a life that is pleasing to the Lord. Now, in the spirit of candor, I want to tell you what my struggle is of these four. And it might surprise you that number two is actually my hardest area. And I would say that for most pastors, that's our hardest area. And you say, well, that doesn't make sense. Well, what happens is you go to college, you study the Bible. You go to seminary, you study the Bible. You spend your life reading the Bible. I've probably read the Bible through like 30 times. It's very easy to get in this rut of there's nothing new. There's no next level. I've read this before. I've studied this before. It's very, very difficult to keep that edge of increasing my knowledge and yearning to deepen even what I know to be true about Him. And I would covet your prayers as your pastor to do number two better this year. And I have some ideas on how I want to do that. I think sometimes when you recognize where you're weak, it helps you be a little bit clearer in what you can do to shore up that weakness. Hopefully you came up with a couple ideas. And my desire is for us each year, 2019, 2020, 25, 30, as we live this life, there is just a momentum in our lives of just spending it pleasing the Lord in all that we do. And hopefully a good way to take your, if you wrote a few ideas down, if you exchange it with somebody and you say, hey, could you once a month ask me how I'm doing in this area? It'd be a really good way to have some accountability for your decision.